So again, welcome. Welcome everyone. Not sure how many talks we've given in this series of Birthing the Heart. Birthing the Heart really has to do with sort of setting our priorities and then our intentions for our life and then calling out that other perspective. It's difficult, there's no question about it. It's a little bit like going to a cinema and watching a movie. The whole movie is a set of images that take place, of course, on the screen. But try sometime when you're in a movie theater to notice the screen. It's almost impossible. Your eyes are so used to fixing upon the dancing images and the story that's being told and the entertainment quality of those images that to settle actually on the screen is extremely difficult. And it's very comparable, very analogous to what we're doing in spiritual work. And that is the mind's display, the images that it's producing, the dance of story and narrative across our mind really consumes our life. It's a very interesting tale, worthy of Oscars, everyone here. But when we get hungry, when we get interested in what's beyond the details, beyond the images, then it becomes a question of, that's all we know. We only know what dances in front of our mind's eye. And so that's where we're birthing the heart. We're birthing their heart partly in relief of the continual display of life before us that has worn out its welcome, you might say. It produces and has created conflict and tensions, stresses in the past. And at some point, we really want to look at the screen. Now, the problem is that the screen doesn't seem too interesting to us. And so we keep losing our way back into the narrative of what our minds are telling us continually on display. And it's only after sort of a repetition of connecting with the screen that we sense that there might be some real value in doing just that. And our daily chores of mindfulness and waking up and sitting and meditating can reach points of focus where we're really sensing that there's a depth that's much richer than the story we tell ourselves. When we see existence free of the manipulative narrative that overlies it. But how do you do that, you see? I mean, what is it that, what wakes up in us that even wants that? But then once you want it, how do you bring that to bear? How do you release the tensions of a life that's been full of the adventures of our storyline to the bare essential qualities of what existence really is? And existence as existence is very full-hearted. That's why we are birthing the heart. We are encouraging that aspect of ourselves that is laid dormant, sometimes stimulated through a mind's play, but mostly lies dormant and is just waiting for its opportunity to show forth when we're not focused upon the display of images. So tonight's talk is on resolution. And resolution is the urgency, I would say. You know, we have intention and we have effort, energy. We have our view of where life is going and the intention to get there, but resolution is a kind of assertion that this is the way we want to go, that we really mean what we say now. It's not just a mild or innocuous intention. It really has some energy behind it. And resolutions, most of us tune into resolutions as a kind of mental wishing that some of us take on the first of the year, called a New Year's resolution, where we see something's wrong with us and we'd like to correct it. And so we have this desire that keeps playing out in the world, and we see that it's not completely skillful or it's unhealthy or whatever that might be. And so then we create another desire to be rid of that desire. And that's our resolution. I want to be free of overeating or whatever it might be. So we have two forces of mind that are in contest to one another, and we call that a willful resolution. But you can see that it never works, at least it never did with me. I'm sure I'm not alone in the room. And the reason it never works is that you know, sometimes this desire of what you really want is just to have more of that entertaining activity. That wins out much of the time, and then sometimes the force of will wins out and holds the other in abeyance, and it doesn't feel good. Either side that wins, you don't win. You either feel sort of tucked in and kind of resentful that you even have a resolution, or you feel indulgent when you give over to it. So that kind of force of will resolution isn't really what we're talking about here. We're talking about a different and a cleaner resolution of heart that has just, it's just seen too much to fall sway to the same logic, the same story and narrative and commentary that it has in the past. And it wants to be finished with it. And it doesn't know exactly how to do that, but it knows that something has to change, and it's willing to resolve toward that end. And so that's really what I'm talking about tonight, is that we get a sense that the direction has to separate from the way our life has drifted, and we have a real strong intention to do just that. Now, it's interesting because the universe meets us proportional to our resolve to show up. So if we're willing to actually show up, we're met in that resolution. But in order to show up, we want some proof of what's going to happen when we do show up. But we have that proof. Usually I say, you know, you have to go ahead and step off the cliff before you can fully experience what the fruit of that step is. But I've looked at it a little differently now. And most of us realize that the more connected we are, the less we suffer. That's the proof. And it's proportional. That is, if we're willing to connect with ourselves in some kind of meaningful and intimate way, we'll notice that the effects of that connecting internally is that we suffer less in relationship to those internal conditions, like our emotions. If we are feeling lonely and we connect with the feeling of being lonely, the loneliness doesn't entice the story and its accompanying pain body to the same degree as if I were blind to that story or if I wasn't conscious to it at all. So the more I pay attention to what's going on in me, the less I suffer. Now, we see that. We see that happening in ourselves, and we see that as we grow in Dharma, that we suffer less and less. And that's because this equation works. It's the proof of the pudding. Now, if we don't want to suffer at all, well, guess what? We have to completely connect. And if we are willing to connect, which is to release the need to fixate upon anything, because when we fixate, we're not connecting, we're holding something within the logic and story of our history. But when we truly connect with something, it's present moment connection, has to be. If it's past, it's not connecting at all, but present moment connection. So things are moving and flowing in a way that does not allow the backlog of irritation, annoyance, and argument, which is the definition of suffering. So there actually is proof that this thing resolves itself, and it's within each one of our grasps. But being what we are still very reluctant to give ourselves over fully, which is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the resolution of the heart. The resolve of the heart is to give ourselves over fully for a couple of reasons, and then I want to go into these reasons with a little more depth and see what will flush out. The first thing, giving ourselves over fully means two things. One is it means not holding our ground, not diverting and running away, not fleeing in aversion, but just holding our ground. In the moment of difficulty, just holding our ground. Now, many of you have been on retreats. All of you have done sitting meditation. And you realize that when you sit down, I'm going to sit down, you make a statement, you know, I'm going to be here for X amount of time. And for many of those periods, you, in the middle of a very difficult meditation period or a difficult retreat, you begin to question your resolve. Are there other things I'd rather be doing? Why am I stuck here for 3 days on this residential retreat? And we suddenly pull back our energy, kind of waiting for it to be over, rather than giving ourselves full-heartedly and showing up for that retreat, or for that meditation, or for that non-residential event. And it's that kind of, compromise of locale that is one of the great factors in conceding ourselves over to the mind and refusing to be completely resolved in the heart. And wherever we are, I should be here, maybe I should be there, or why am I doing this, and why am I doing this, instead of this complete acceptance of our position in life, of our firm placement in life, and then letting life come from that, we start displacing ourselves, arguing about where we are or where we should be in relationship to where we actually are, which is here, and it's always here. So that's the first thing I want to encourage tonight, is a firmer resolution of your place, of your position, of your stance, of your present position, of your coordinates on the earth. They're undisputable. You can't be in another place. It's like this joke I once heard about Mullah Nasruddin, who is a Sufi fool, who was having an affair with his friend's wife, and his friend comes into the bedroom where Mullah and his wife are having the affair, and Mullah's hiding in the closet, and his friend comes in and opens the closet door, and there's Mullah standing naked in the closet. And the friend says, "Mullah," surprised to see him, "what are you doing here?" And Mullah says, "Everybody's got to be someplace." So let us be that someplace. let us take a firm position in that someplaceness. Now, the second way that resolution occurs is that once we own our place, then we have to risk what we're exposing. We have to be open, and we've spoken a lot about this in this series, about the willingness to not fixate, because we lose our place within that fixation, but just to stay open and fluid to the movements of what it is that's occurring. And that sense of being fluid, but also risking, because when we're fluid, we're unprotected. And when we're unprotected, we're undefended. And unless we have a strong sense of ethical conduct, we will be exposing ourselves to the raw behaviors of our unskillful actions. And this has some fear and trepidation of us being discovered and found out, and also some of the ways that we have held ourselves throughout our life, and the ways that we believe faulty assumptions about ourselves, all of that gets exposed as well, because we're not defended. We're not trying to protect others from seeing what they see when they look at us. And so all of that takes an enormous amount of courage, and we never reach our threshold in which we move into the courage sufficiently, partially because we keep thinking ourselves out of that place. Oh, I wish I was somewhere else. I wish I could hide right now and not have to answer this question, or whatever the circumstances are. And so that willingness to risk is coupled very firmly with our willingness to be present in the position we're in. And so we work those two in tandem with one another. We're in our place, and we begin to, in our own time, expose what it is that's there, to show the world what we are unafraid to see for ourselves. But this has to be active. I don't want to make this somehow an intellectual endeavor. This is behavior. The talk tonight, and you'll be seeing it, I'm going to suggest behaviors for us. Assertive behavior that starts moving ourselves in the direction of heart exposure, of resolution of heart. So I want to take a moment because I want to so the question comes, why is the resolve to expose ourselves and to show up completely for our life, why is it so difficult? So the reason is because we have competing motivations. We have other things that come up that we would rather do than be honest and sincere, to be honest. So here's a series of questions that I want to pose each of us, just to think about and reflect upon as a way to understand the competing motivations that we all live with that keep us sidetracked from this clear resolution and firm commitment to birthing our hearts. So follow these if you would. What would allow your life to move in the direction of your heart? So just pose that question to yourself. What would allow my life to move in the direction of my heart? What would allow that to happen more fully than it's happening now? What do I need? What would I, in order for that to occur? What do I need perhaps mentally in order to set myself on that course? What do I need in terms of the logistics of my life, the different arrangements that it's, the different components of it. What do I need? Number two, what would you like to see changed in your life so that you could be more dharmically oriented? What would do you need changed? What part of your life, as it's now being lived, will need to be changed in order for you to live in accordance to the birthing of your heart? Now, what we're fleshing out here is the competing motivations. And you have to be very honest with what it is that, where you're really giving your energy. And these questions are meant to expose that competition, that competing energetic leak that keeps us from being committed dharmically the way we would or think we would like to be. Here's number three. What are your complaints about your life, and what do your complaints imply? Complaints imply. What are your complaints about your life, and what do your complaints imply? That's an interesting one. What are my complaints about my life? What don't I like about the way things are, you know, my kids, my children, my job, my spouse, my this or that? And what do those complaints imply? Complaints imply. They imply that I can't show up for a variety of different reasons, because if I only had a better boss, then everything would work, or whatever it might be. Number four, what are you doing or not doing that is keeping your Dharma commitment from being fully realized? What are you doing in your everyday life? What do you do or not do that keeps your Dharma life from being fully realized? You see, we're looking at competing motivations here. When you imagine yourself being full-hearted in practice, is there any underlying worry or vague fear of doing so? When you can perceive that your life could be full-hearted, is there a fear or worry about what might happen if I did become full-hearted in my Dharma practice? And the last one, by engaging in this undermining activity, in what direction have you committed your life to take? So when I have agreed that my life won't be Dharma focused, that it will be on whatever business opportunity comes or whatever it might be, what have I committed my life to? And is that the way I want it to go? Now, behind these competing motivations lies assumptions about ourselves that often keep us aligned with the competing motivation rather than the true Dharma spirit. And we have to use these questions to sort of expose those competing motivations so that we get a sense that there are ways that we align our energy so that just off center a little bit, so that these competing motivations will be enhanced and the Dharma practice will be devalued. So what are these big assumptions? What are these assumptions? And we want to look at a few of them, if we could, just to see whether any of them resonate with you. And again, if they do, just to be honest and bring those assumptions to bear and look at one's life and say, okay, so is this assumption, have I been living with it because it's convenient to live with, it's easier than doing what I think is much harder, which is being throwing my energy in a resolved kind of way into the Dharma. I mean, is it just a kind of way to keep in the audience, to keep looking at the film in front of me and not really look at the screen, but just play out that story that's running in front of me? So what are these big assumptions? And they're often tied to egoic needs. These are not, I'm not in any way judging these. I'm just trying to expose them. Unless we're willing to expose them, then they remain dormant and they continue to guide our life. But we're not able to really make any corrections because we've conceded our life to these main assumptions. And we never test those assumptions, which hold the energy away or divert the energy away from the resolution of the heart that's necessary for Dharma practice to really be fulfilled. So the first assumption, I'm not ready. I have more work to do. You know, I kind of labor under this one because many of us have been spent years practicing. And the practicing year after year after year, there's a kind of way that we might think of it in terms of preparation. That's at some point, you know, I'll really show up for my life. But I just haven't reached that point. If I look at it, you know, I can see things happening. I can see my mind steadying a little bit, maybe getting a little quieter, my heart opening, paying a little more attention, you know, just being a more decent person. But I'm still not ready because as I depict my life, as I look at my life, I'm just kind of, you know, in a kind of in-between state. And suddenly, when we give ourselves over to the practice of Dharma, what we begin to discover is that that becomes the end. That becomes the ends we seek. Practice becomes the end, becomes the very reason to practice is to practice. And I have seen it in many people, and I just want to bring it out so that if it's in you, you own it. Where practice becomes its own system. And people don't want it touched. They're very protective or can be very protective of the way they practice and how they practice and where the practice is going. And they have a whole logic associated with it. It just isn't bringing out the heart. It just isn't birthing the heart. It's not, the heart isn't being resolved in the practice, which is what good practice is supposed to do. It's just being used as a kind of a cultivation of continuance. So we need to look at that, if that's what's happening with us. If that's what's keeping a resolution of the heart. We need to look at that. What am I using my practice for? Is there always something more I need to get from practice? What am I working towards? I mean, if there's something you'll never obtain, it's the thought of completion about where you're working towards. There will be no completion. Wherever you think you are and wherever you think you need to be, you'll never be where you think you need to claim completion. Won't happen. Won't happen. Now is the completion. I don't care where we think have the character readiness of it, or we have the mind stillness of it, or whether we have the heart opening for it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's that sense of resolution says, this is enough. This is enough. I'm standing on this. I'm standing my ground on this. I'm not going to continue to move on and on. Never settled, never stable. Always more to do. You can feel that. You can feel the resolution. You know, the coins come down from the slot machine. Now, I can stand on that. See? What are we working towards? Each of us have an idea. I mean, we bring that, and it's okay for a while, but pretty quickly we need to see through that image on the screen of consciousness that says, there is more for me to do. Secondly, am I afraid of failing? Is that what holds me back? If I actually showed up for myself, would I be able to show up for myself? But this is even sillier than the first one, because there is no failure. There cannot be any definition of failure in meditation. There's no avenue, no angle in which you could say, oh, he or she failed. Because if you aren't able or aren't willing to do what's required, then that, knowing that, is what's required. In other words, wherever you think you're lacking, to know that, to see that in oneself, to feel that sense of lacking, is itself sufficient to move on. I don't know how to say it so that everybody's mind will hook into that, because that's such an important point. You see, it has to do with the first one, which was, am I ready? It's this sense of being a failure. Okay, let me just own being a failure. I failed at everything. Okay, so that's the past. I feel the emotion. Now let me just jump into that. Let me just feel what that's like. And I'm going to feel it here and now. And guess what happens when you feel it here and now? There's no failure. It's only a failure from the burdensome reference to where I've been and what I've done and who I am and all of that. That's the only way a failure, the definition of failure, can move into our system. But from present moment awareness, there is or cannot be any failure. It's just something else going on in the mind, the thought of failureness. So if that thought in you, assumption in us, is prevalent, stop it. It has no basis. The third one, okay, these are the ways that we avoid complete resolution of the heart. That's what we're exploring here. And the assumptions that lead us to betraying our willingness to towards full resolution. The third one is, I really want this. I don't know if I really want it. I kind of like working towards it better than having it. Yeah? I mean, when you start talking about this and that, I think, oh my God, I don't know. That would disrupt my life too much. I much prefer coming in and listening to Tuesday night's talks and leaving without any noticeable change. So, what is going to make the difference? Which are those series of questions? You see, what is it that holds me back in a pretending kind of mode, just holding myself in, you know, bridling myself, holding myself back? What is it that that's going to allow me to know that I am ready and that I really want it? Well, I'll tell you one thing. How about death? We don't have that much time. You know, every once in a while, and there are a few Sangha members, very dear Sangha members, who are on the edge of their life now. And you wake up to the fact that these people have been with us now for, in some cases, decades. And they're on the edge of their life. And that life does not play softball. It plays hardball. And that this will happen to us as well. And this too will happen to you and I. And how do you want your life to be lived? What's going to make it meaningful? Because we're up at the plate and it's strike two. And it's coming, you know. So to really take this in, just start really taking that, it really brings that resolution of heart forward. I don't have time. I don't have time. You know, people say, Rodney, aren't you going to teach forever? No, I don't have time to teach forever. I'm going to, at some point, leave and really bring full-hearted attention to what the rest of my journey. Because I don't have time. Well, the fourth one is an important one, but most of us miss it. And that, are we using the right strategies? You know, we get caught up in sort of using the strategies of the story of the movie, turning it back on what can break us from the habit of watching the movie. You can't do that. There's got to be a refreshing quality to this, a recycling, a renewal process to this, and to stop and just say, okay, wait a second here. Let me look. I don't need to move outside this present moment. It's got to be here, or it cannot be anywhere. So I'm not going to frame my search, my practice, outside of the here and now. It doesn't make any sense. As soon as I leave the here and now, I can be assured I'm using the mental strategies that have perpetuated my discomfort and burden, my pain of never being complete or content. As soon as I move outside and journey into the wandering spirit of where I need to go in terms of my logic, self-logic, I can be sure I'm lost. It's here or it's not. So let me start here and not reframe the issue. And then you pull that, there's the resolution, you pull it in. You don't let it just seep out anymore. This is not flat tire. And this isn't a slow leak of inner. This is, I'm pulling it all in now. Let me look at this thing. I align my search to what is already here. See, that changes everything. It changes everything when we do that. Because what's already here then is questioned from a different perspective. Rather than leading me out of the moment, what is already here is the moment. Right? I'm feeling this and I've got to, you know, I'm feeling a little bit irritated and so I'm going to apply this system to my irritation so that I can feel better. Then after I feel better, now I can ask what's actually here. Meanwhile, we've missed everything. All right, the next one has to do with this one. This is the fifth. And that is wanting to know how well we're doing. Everybody gets caught in this at some point. So this is not to highlight or judge anyone in the room. But again, this isn't really about us. All the work we've done is not about us. Isn't that interesting? So you have to... constant release the need to self-reference everything around the practice. You know, not only the quantity of what you think you have in terms of your samadhi or your concentration or your generosity or your whatever it is, but the kind of the constant self-referencing is the wrong strategy. What is it that forces me to think in terms of diminishment, self-diminishment? You see, where am I? How you know, I've done this for a long time. How am I gaining on? How am I doing? What do I need? That's the wrong strategy. That spins us back to ourselves. Okay, the sixth one. Some of us are afraid to really allow ourselves to relax with ourselves because we think the worst of us will appear within that relaxed response. We think that some part of ourselves that we are afraid of will come out. At least I had that fear. I felt that, you know, I need a certain self-tension in me to keep myself kind of straight-jacketed in a correct posture, psychic posture, so that I don't lash out in the way I really wanted to. And just the opposite is true. It's within that relaxed response that the best of us can come out. The best qualities of us are nourished in relaxation. It's not the worst qualities that come out. It's the best qualities that come out. When we relaxed, our heart is unleashed. Not the beast in us is unleashed. But we have this, I think it's a Freudian way of looking that, you know, I need the superego to keep the id tucked in. It's completely false. All of us have unskillful tendencies in us. But if we're willing to show up for them, they are just that. They're just unskillful tendencies. If we can release the need to fight or argue with those tendencies, then we birth the heart. The heart births. Related to this is the next one, which is the fear of being authentic. The fear of being authentic. What if I want to be authentic and people then see me the way I see myself? Then I expose everything. If I show you who I am and you don't like me, I used to keep this sign on my desk. If I show you who I am and you don't like me, that's all I have. Right? That's all I have. So I'm not going to show you that part of me because lying dormant in me is a sense of inadequacy, of unworthiness that is really carving out my whole life around that self-doubting concept, that assumption. And then the last one is, what if the Dharma is wrong? I mean, you know, emptiness, come on. It's completely illogical. It's counterintuitive, completely counterintuitive. So why should I buy into this? I mean, it's kind of fun. You know, you kind of get to hang out with nice people. I don't know why nice people would come to such fool-hearted teachings, but they seem to. But from time to time, you know, what is here? What is really here? What am I in truth? Not what I am, what am I in concept? What am I in my belief? Not what am I in my images? But when I'm quiet enough to sense existence, not the conversation I offer to existence, but just existence free of the conversation, free of my own story, what is this thing? Whoa. Maybe it does have something to say. And you can get a sense of that. You can get a sense of that. Every one of you have had a sense of that, or you wouldn't be in the room. But you can, against the interactive and often argumentative interactions of the day, that can quickly be lost. What's Dharma anyway? What use is it to me? These are all assumptions that keep us within a compromising pose to our full resolution of heart. That's all I'm bringing up today. And it leaves us in a kind of purgatory, between energetic resolutions. We can't quite go back to the way we were and believe firmly in greed and hatred. Can't do that anymore. We can't believe fully in the disconnected, separate world that we used to exist in full-heartedly, which kept it going full-heartedly. Right? We're in this purgatory where the energy isn't sufficient yet to commit totally to something in which it's being blocked by numerous assumptions. And so we're between the worlds, between the worlds. And it's that in-between state that's perhaps worse than being in one side or the other fully. It's like we're not, it's like hopping on a very slow moving train, but we're not, we just have one foot on the platform, the other foot's being dragged. So I think it's time now to put both feet on the train. Let's go. Let's do this thing. And so I want to suggest some action statements for you to live with. I'm trying to make this very pragmatic, very practical for you, for all of us. And so when you wake up in the morning, I'm going to give you three action statements. Today, I will take whatever reality is offering. So that's a full resolution of heart. Whatever is offering, I'm not going to complain. There will be no arguments. The second one, I will not argue with reality. I'm going to take it. It's not adjusting or adapting to it. It's just, this is it. This is the display at hand. This is the moment. There's a complete surrendering into the moment at hand. And that's the resolution. That's the full resolution of heart. And the third action statement is one that I think all of us need to practice. And I will not move with mind states. Today I will not move with my states of mind. They are not going to drive me today. They are not going to be the energy that I invest and continue. Because all they do is they give you a story that needs an ending, and we play out the action of the state of mind rather than seeing the state of mind as a state of mind. We play it out. We give our energy over to the story that it's telling about us and fall into the logic of that story. No more. I'm not doing that today. You can feel it, can't you? And so therein builds our resolution of heart. Very practical, down-to-earth ways of being. Thank you all.